Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 841. It's the 7th of August 2017. On the podcast today, I have Neil Sinclair, CEO of Palace Capital, that's PCA ticker, and Neil discusses their £20 million Newcastle acquisition and also other aspects of the business. Plus, Malky, as of Monday, Oil and Gas Sector Authority talks about Providence Resources, as PBR, Genel Energy, GENL, President's Energy, PBC, and Emeriser Resources, AMER. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and I've got to say, there's two companies battling it out the last few weeks, and it's happened again for the top spot. Plus, I also have, of course, the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Sinclair, CEO of Palace Capital. That's PCA ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Delighted. Good morning.
Now, you've had a bit of news out today, a quite exciting bit of news, an acquisition you've done, undertaken, and we'll get that in a bit. For people not aware, though, Neil, of what you do at Palace Capital, can you give a brief summary as to what the business is about, please?
Yes, Palace Capital is a quoted company, and we specialise in buying property outside London. We've done this since 2011, and we've taken advantage of what we consider to be the regional upturn. As you know, the government are very keen to get the regions moving, and we've taken advantage of that. And what we do is that in the last 6-7 years, we have built up a portfolio which is now at just over 200 million, all property which is outside London. We have a rental income now of over 14 million a year and a net asset value of about 110 million. So that's what we do. We've done three fundraisings. One in 2013, one in 2014, and one in 2015.
Yeah.
So that's what we've done. And we've now grown the company. The market cap this morning was 93 million.
Yeah, and very impressive. And let's get to the news today. So you've made an acquisition, £20 million property acquisition in Newcastle. Can you take us to the detail of this, please, Neil?
Yes. We are very keen to buy properties close to railway stations and transport hubs. We think the future is that the car will be used less and that more and more people will want to be in city centres because they don't drive. So we've just bought this property in Newcastle. It's about 3 minutes walk from Newcastle Station. It's a complex that was developed by an Irish concern called McAleer and Rush. It was developed about 10 years ago. They sold off various parts that they developed. One is the Jury's Inn, which is one of the most successful Jury's Inn in the country. There's an office building which was sold off, and then there was a residential building that was sold off. But left was an office building which they built, which is now fully let, and a small retail element which we bought. And we bought the company. So we bought the company that operated all this, and we're getting a net return on our 20 million of about 8.6%. We have some really good tenants in the building. We've got Eldon Insurance, we've got UBS, we've got the Lottery Charities Board, all, and Serco. So all pretty good tenants, and we're quite excited about it because Newcastle is a definite growth town.
Yeah, excellent sort of yield on that. And And you must, when you're doing your sort of due diligence, Neil, on the thing, they must have to tick a lot of boxes. And you mentioned there they have to be close to transport hubs. And I'm interested in the stat there. You say that you think more people will be, not using the car in the future. And is that based on research or?
Well, there was a statement last week, funnily enough, which you can check. The statement came out last week that the number of people learning to drive at the moment is the lowest ever.
Wow.
And we met one local authority in the north who told us that one of their problems is that some of the offices in out of town are becoming less popular because people are not driving.
Yes.
So they're difficult to get to. So yeah. This property is 3 minutes from Newcastle Station, and a lot of people in London don't realise, but Newcastle has a metro system. So besides overground, it has a metro system.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and Newcastle Station is on the metro as well. So that's quite important to us.
Okay, and at the moment, Neil, I know you sold a few early on in the year there, but how many properties do you have at the moment?
We've got 46. Mm-hmm. We have 46 properties. Some are bigger than others. We've got some significant assets. But what we do is we sell the properties where we see little opportunity for growth, which we may have acquired through having acquired a company or a portfolio. And we've been doing that. We did it last year. We sold nearly £13 million worth of property last year. And we put this money back into assets where we see more opportunities, such as Newcastle. So in Newcastle, we took out a loan from Santander, and most of the balance of the cash came from properties that we had sold.
Yeah.
So
Go on, sorry.
Yeah, we sort of recycle our money.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. I mean, obviously, shareholders will be happy with that because it's not dilutive in any way. And you're quite a rare company on AIM because you do pay a dividend, which is quite nice.
We do. We pay a dividend. We just announced that our second half dividend will be 9.5p. So we've paid 18.5p for the year ending 31st of March 2017.
Mm-hmm. And is there a sort of finite amount of properties you're looking at, or is the number irrelevant as long as you can find the right deal?
Yes, sorry, but the dividend is 18.5p, sorry, not 19.
That's all right, yeah, yeah.
It's okay. 9.5p. We paid 9p in the first half and 9.5p in the second half.
Okay, excellent.
So we're 18.5p. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we adopt a progressive dividend policy.
Yeah.
We've done that from day one. Our dividend, when we did our first big deal, we announced that our dividend for the year would be 12p. So we're now well up to 18.5p, and we've kept faith with all our shareholders, and we've done what we said we'd do.
Yeah. So just to reiterate, as far as the number of properties you have, do you want to limit that, or do you not care about the number you have? As long as they propose a good deal, you'll do the deal, yeah?
We'll do a deal, but we try to buy slightly bigger properties now rather than smaller ones.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller ones you tend to pick up when you buy a portfolio,
mm-hmm.
And some of those, if we did do that, we would keep them rather than sell them if they show growth. But some of the smaller ones you pick up often don't show any growth, and therefore you might as well sell them.
Yeah, and just a question on the market, the general market and the sentiment at the moment. I mean, we've got obviously Brexit looming. Have you found?
Yeah, after you.
Have you found it negative? Have you found it hard to find properties, or is it making it easy to find properties? What's the deal there?
No, it's not. It's not easy because you're competing with foreign investors, and of course, the foreign investors have got the benefit of the devaluation of the pound. So. Mm-hmm. May have noticed in the last couple of weeks, particularly in London, a lot of overseas investors are still buying.
Yeah.
Because it's cheap. You know, the dollar's dropped to 131, 132, and in consequence, as far as I'm concerned, if you look pre-Brexit, foreign investors, particularly dollar-denominated, get a 15% advantage on currency.
Mm-hmm.
And the UK... people underestimate the strength of this country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. We have great faith in this country. And we actually see Brexit as an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And you're seeing this foreign investment. I mean, this is filtering out to the regions as well, is it, apart from London?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No, it is, yeah. We sold a building about a few months ago in Leeds. We sold it to a Saudi Arabian group.
Mm.
They're definitely in the region. The Chinese are investing heavily in Manchester. They're very involved in Manchester Airport and parts of central Manchester. The Chinese are big investors in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And, so as far as you're concerned, though, you're not worried about the Brexit process. You think for your business, there'll be opportunity. You're saying that?
We think it's an opportunity. It might make decision-making on lettings. People might think twice, do they do it, do they not do it? Half the problem, in my view, is the media. They just underestimate the strength of the UK economy.
Yeah.
And they put doubts in people's minds. But as far as we're concerned, we're very confident about the future. It could be a bit wobbly in the next 2 years, mainly because of uncertainty.
Yeah.
But at the end of it all, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay, now listen, if anyone's listening and they like the sound of Palace Capital, but they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, I think people should look at Palace Capital, because what we've done since we started is we have grown the net asset value of the company. Certainly since our deal in 2013, we've grown our net asset value by over 100%. We've increased our dividends by over 50%. And we've taken the value of the company from £100,000 in 2010 to over £90 million today. And we have a range of institutional shareholders who hold over 70% of our shares. So that's who we've got following us. And we will continue to look and try and do the deals like the one we've just announced. It is no secret. We have not bought a property for 12 months. And the reason for that was we couldn't find anything that gave us the return we wanted.
Yeah.
So we're a bit picky, but when we see something we like, we really go for it.
I mean, that's good, having that discipline. You know, I mean, as an investor in stocks and shares, I find one of the strongest strengths you can have is discipline and patience, you know, and stick to your standards rather than thinking, oh, I'll just go for that. I'll buy something, because that's what you've got to stick to it. If it's working, you've got to stick to it, haven't you?
I'm very much so. And we adopt a policy. People say to us, what's the best deal you've ever done? We normally say, probably one of the deals we walked away from.
Yeah,
you mustn't fall in love with your buildings, and you must be prepared to walk away. Must.
And
we walked away from several because we couldn't see the return.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent, Neil. Good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for talking.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a Monday morning, and joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Justin, and you?
I'm all right, but I did fancy it was a bit cooler this morning. You know, almost like we're getting a glimpse of autumn, and I think we've had a bit of summer, but it's not over yet.
Yeah, it's a big dew on the grass when I walked out this morning, so yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, Malky, when this news came out last week, I was thinking I wouldn't mind getting Malky chatting about this. And that was Providence Resources. And they came up with a bit of bad news on their first drill, the Druid prospect. And the share price has tanked, 45% or something, 50%. What's your take on this, Malky?
Okay, well, the first thing is that, it isn't time to completely head for the lifeboats in Providence. Yeah, they halved on Friday because the market had been waiting a long time to drill this prospect. Druid was water wet, as they say, so there wasn't any oil in the first part, which was Druid. But they're continuing to drill on because they've got a prospect about 1,000 meters deeper, which is called Drumbeg. And to be honest, just because the top one was dry doesn't mean say the second one will be. I mean, a lot of people will tell you that it's less likely to be oil bearing, but I would say that's not necessarily the case. So that'll take a few weeks to drill on down into the Lower Cretaceous, and could easily still be a result. It won't be quite as big as it might have been if Druid had come in.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be honest, first of all, it isn't all is not lost on that particular drill. Second thing is, you've got to take a look at to see what else Providence has got. So it's not the end of the Irish Atlantic margin, because there are a lot of things going on. Providence, as well as other companies, have seen some big players come into the area in the last couple of years. You saw Total was prepared to farm into this, and so Providence have taken a lot of cash for this. They took, I think, some $27 million. So, you know, this was effectively a free shout for them. And they've still got a number of other things. And there are a lot of other companies, apart from Total, people like Statoil and BP, and a number of the majors have come in and are looking at the offshore island situation. Even ones who are the smaller stocks, like Europa. So, you know, all is not lost. You know, it's been a disappointment. I know there were a lot of people in this one. But it just does remind people that, you know, when you're in an out-and-out exploration play, if you get a bad result, it's inevitably going to take a hit on the share price. And one or two people would have been forced sellers on Friday as well.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, there's huge potential upside. You know, that's why people invest in these things. But like I said, there's there's a lot of risk. And, you know, the chances, I don't know what the percentages are, the chance of success on exploration, but it's very low. It's like 1 in 4, 1 in 5, isn't it? Something like that. So,
It's not as good as that. I mean, a rank wildcat exploration in the North Sea used to be, you know, sort of 1 in 10, 1 in 15.
Okay.
This day and age, with the better, you know, looking at reservoirs and things with better seismic and so on, you know, you might find that you've got a 20% chance of success, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it just reminds you that's what the situation is when you're in straight up E&P plays.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's the common thought that you said there, the Drombeg there, in a prospect, is there less chance of being a success there, you think, or is it the same?
Well, I think if you ask Tony O'Reilly, he would say the fact that the higher prospect has dried doesn't mean any difference. But actually, in terms of total return, of course it does, because you were hoping that you were going to get Druid and Drombeg come in, which, as you said, would have been a barnstormer for the shares, and they would have gone up a long way. I think that they still will go back up to the sort of previous levels if we're in a situation whereby, you know, the market says, right, if Drombeg comes in. But, you know, it won't be the potential upside as it was if both of them come in.
No, I mean, I think there's, what's it, 5 billion barrels prospective there, and there's 3 billion at the top there at Druid, and 2 billion pretty much at the bottom, wasn't it? So obviously, it's still massive, but it's not as big as it was, you know?
Yeah, that's what you've got to bear in mind. You forget about what's just happened and say, we're now looking at what is a, you know, out-and-out play, which in itself would be a success story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to say, I did hold some stock, and I still hold stock, and I haven't sold anything, because I think, you know, if this was their only prospect, then I probably would have taken the hit and walked away. But considering they've got about 9 licenses there, and they've got, obviously, Barry Row, which is massive, and all that stuff, there's still a lot to play for, isn't there, you know?
Yeah, they have got a lot on their plate, and this is no way an end of this play. So we've got we've still got a lot to look forward to in Providence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else are you looking at, Malky?
Well, I was looking at Genel last week, which is GENL, and this is very much coming back onto my radar screen again. We had some very positive announcements last week. We had results which were much more positive than I was expecting. In fact, I wrote about them twice last week, because I tried to be positive on the first one and then gave them had another look. And when I looked at it, I saw that the results were maybe better than I had first indicated, because the cash flow, which was 28 million, was better than expected. TAC, which is the field which is proving to be quite disappointing in terms of recent downgrades, but actually is still producing a lot of cash. And the company has got strong cash generation. Net debt is now down by a third, and they've had good results from the Peshka beer well. And of course, the longer term story for Genel, which has been a sort of basket case for some time, is very much intact. And this is the gas story from Miran and Bina Bawi. And this is now becoming very much a reality. It's looking like they could start to develop the gas, and I think this would be very profitable for the company. So a stock which has been sort of out of favour for some time. I'm meeting up with the company in a couple of weeks' time because I think it's important to get to grips with what it looks like now. And I think that I'm expecting to be reasonably impressed. It's very much back on the radar screen. I'm looking at Genel again. One or two investors are coming back into the stock, and I think it's looking as interesting as it has done for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That's Genel ticker. Anything else there, Marky?
Yeah, there's two stocks I want to talk about. One is President, one is Amerisur. Mm-hmm. So we're moving to South America here. President had an announcement last week that they've been working very hard and having a lot of success in their workover wells in Argentina. And they've got a very busy program. They've been shutting quite a lot in August for a number of reasons, but they're now beginning to pick up again. And I think in September, I expect to see a significant work program. They've got 600 barrels a day. They will be drilling four new wells. They've got three more wells where they'll be increasing the volume quite substantially. And they've got three more wells where they're going to have a stimulation program, which will be, I suspect, quite good. So, you know, we're going to pick up volumes and capacity, and I expect from the 600 to probably double, maybe a bit more. And, of course, the stock, I think, is hugely undervalued for what it is, and it's got a high-quality management. It's well-financed. And Argentina is becoming a very interesting place. We saw a couple of weeks ago that Andes Energia had done a deal, and they're in the Vaca Muerta, so they've got unconventional as well as conventional. This is conventional. But you notice that the Chancellor of the Exchequer visited Argentina last week. The company is very much getting back on its feet now that President Macri appears to be getting things back into some sort of order. So I'm expecting good things from President. I don't think the market quite got hold of President yet. It had a bit of a checkered history a couple of years ago. Things went wrong last year on a technical level, and they're trying to get their money back from the service, oil field service company there. And, you know, I think it's just been sort of rather hidden. So PPC is very much one for the watch list.
Yeah, well, I'm just, you know, looking at the chart there, and I quite like that. It's trading in a nice range of between 6 and 8 pence. And anything in at the moment, it's about 6.8 pence. And it's had that spike to 14 pence. So now it's almost waiting just for a catalyst, you seem, you know. But I doubt if it goes below. Be very surprised if it goes below 6 pence, because it tested that level about three or four times now, and it's not gone below it. So
it's run by a guy called Peter Levine, who's funded this himself. He's got a huge amount of skin in the game here, and he is absolutely determined. I've never seen anyone more determined to make sure that something goes right, and this is the stock to watch out for.
Marvellous. Okay, what's next, Malky?
Well, finally, I want to talk about Amerisur, because this is a stock which has been, you know, underperforming. Quite a lot of the E&P stocks are, despite the fact that the oil price is now, you know, north of 50 bucks. Amerisur announced last week that they had to suspend their fields in the southern part of the country because the Colombian government are completing what they call the post-FARC social progress. Now, remember, the FARC are the renegades who caused all the trouble in the past. That is all sorted and behind them, and all they have to do now is make sure that the farmers stop growing coke, And the FARC and the government have got together and said that there's no longer going to be a market for this, and they're now going to be growing, I don't know, green beans, avocados, peppers, you name it. So they had to shut down production for 2 or 3 weeks last month. And so I decided to pick up the phone and speak to John Wardle, who's the CEO and runs the Colombian operation, on Friday. And it was an extremely productive interview I had with him. The bottom line is that in the long run, they are now in a much stronger position. Production is back on. They're now producing over 6,000 barrels a day, 5,000 a day going through the OBA pipeline to Ecuador, and they're developing the relationships and the necessary kits to put into the pumping station and on the other side to increase that capacity. They can increase the capacity, you know, reasonably swiftly over the next few months. I expect that to go up. And you know, their longer-term target, 7,000 barrels a day by the end of the year, is still very much intact. And 10 or 12,000 is not out with speculation. And the reason for that is that they've got this highly successful well on CPO-5 in the north of the country. Now, you know, this is a very promising piece of kit, because I think their portion of this will be their 3,000 barrels a day there and thereabouts, which will push them up, well over the 10,000 barrels a day. Now, the only thing that people are griping about here is that it's just taking a long time. As I said, Amerisur are not the operator here; it's ONGC, and ONGC are painfully slow at these sort of things. You know, decisions cannot be made in country. They've got to be referred back to India, and so it does take quite a long time to get it up to speed. But when it does, it'll be a very good potentially, you know, sort of company making production with more to come. So, you know, if maybe that Amerisur could, you know, could persuade them that it's Amerisur who could be doing the operating of this this well and the other ones, even that would be even better. But, you know, it was reassuring to have a long and very positive discussion with John Wardle, who is absolutely first rate, on Friday. And I'm extremely positive about this stock, which has, you know, been marked down unnecessarily.
Yeah, well, if you get 10,000 barrels a day, that's it's a lot for a company that's, what, 200 million market cap at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely right. And I see no reason why their interim target of 12,000 barrels a day can't be achieved before too long. They've got a number of wells to develop, and in the Putumayo, and as I said, in CPO-5 in the north, that's a matter of time rather than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. That's Amerisur's AMER ticker. Malky, thanks for that, and speak next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it, Justin. Take care now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, covered the chart earlier with Nicola Duke, the Duchess of the Chart. It's Bzent Resources, BZT. At four, and there's a rumour out today in the Evening Standard in London, that Adele is now a shareholder in this company, EVRH, and over the weekend it was as a punt of the week in the Mail Online. So, yes, a lot of people following that. EVRH, virtual reality there. At three, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AOG. At two, Ascent Resources, always there. AST had Colin on the podcast on Friday. And the number one most followed companies in a tussle with Ascent at the moment, the top spot pretty much on a daily basis, it's UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. All right, top five most liked RNSs this morning on the platform were from Iron Ridge Resources at five, IRR, Infill Gold Sol results received. At four, Kefi Minerals, KEFI, lifting of state emergency in Ethiopia. Wow. It's amazing how an RNS gets popular because of the lifting of state emergency in Ethiopia. Of course, they're based there. One of their projects is based at Tulu Kapi, their gold project. At three, Echo Energy, appointment of broker. At two, Metal Tiger, also covered the chart with Nicola Duke this morning. Drilling and production report. And best way to get hold of the podcast, really, is to subscribe via Audioboom or iTunes. And it gets dropped into your podcast app every day. And number one, most liked RNS on the platform this morning was from Premier African Minerals. That's PREM. And the title of that RNS was Zulu Lithium Drilling Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much was appreciato.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.